Hello everyone, and welcome to my talk about the foreign function interface, also known as Project Panama. I'm Martin Durr, and I've implemented the foreign function interface for the Power architecture, also known as PowerPC. Obviously, I'm in the SAP machine team. SAP machine is our OpenJDK distribution, but we don't only make distributions. We are also one of the biggest contributors to OpenJDK, as already mentioned by Mark this morning. So it's good to have you here, and let's immediately get started with an example. So let's assume we have a native library. It's called time.so, and it contains a function getTime with some signature. It takes a C string and a length, and now the task is to call this function from Java. So of course we can traditionally do this with JNI, so by writing a C layer, and then we can call it from Java, but let's skip that and jump directly to the foreign function interface. So we can now do everything directly from Java. There's no need for an extra C layer anymore. And by the way, the term downcall means we're calling from Java to native, so this direction. So what does this example code do? In the static initializer, we load the time.so, the library. And then we need to set up a couple of other things before we can use it. So first of all, we describe the array with the size and the type. So in Java, the char array is represented by a Java byte array. And we also need to describe the signature of the getTime function. Then we will need the address of the function. We use the symbol lookup for that. That allows us to create a memory segment for that. So the address is represented as a memory segment. Then we can use the native linker to create a downcall handle. I'll explain that in a minute. So once we have set all of this up, it's pretty easy to use. We can just use a thread local arena and then create or allocate the array and then pass it to the function. The getTime method handle invokes the time function in the native library, and at the end we only need to convert the results which were written into the array back to a Java string which we can print out. So I promised to tell more about the native linker. What does native linker do? It finds us a linker for the platform we are using. There are 10 different linkers implemented within the JDK for 10 64-bit platforms. On x86, we have one linker, which is used for Linux and Mac. On ARM64, there are in total 3 linkers. There are different calling conventions. And also on Power, which I have worked on, we have 3 linkers. Power processors can run in both little and big endian mode, and modern Linux uses little endian, which comes with ABI for version 2, so it's a newer calling convention. Old Linux versions still use big endian and the old ABI. That platform is already out of support actually, but we are still keeping it alive. Because the ABI is very similar to AIX, and as you can see, AIX is still supported. It's IBM's traditional Unix, and in addition to that, we also support RISC-V and SV90 on Linux. So quite a few native linkers were implemented, but what about other platforms? Can we run it on a 32-bit machine, for example? Yes, we can. Other platforms are supported by libffi. But that means we need a separate library, and we have to call through it, and that makes it, of course, a bit slower. So once we have the native linker, we can use it to create a downcall handle, and this is my most complicated slide. There's a lot of things to do for that. Besides some checks and caching, downhole handle classifies the arguments and the return types. For example, structures can be passed in registers or by reference. And some platforms have special rules for homogeneous float aggregates. The word is terrible to pronounce, and it was even worse to implement. It's only on some platforms, and then there are more simple types like pointer, integer, and float. Once we have classified them, the downcall handle can create bindings. Bindings are a recipe to for processing the arguments and the return types, and they are implemented by operators. It's modeled as a stack-based interpreter, a bit similar to Java bytecode. And I have some examples on the slide. For example, the dub operator, it just duplicates the top of stack. And then there's a buffer load that loads a value from a memory segment. And we have a VM store, and that writes a value into a register or into a stack slot. There are much more, but I can't go into all details. It's not only similar to Java bytecode, it also gets compiled or translated to Java bytecode. There's a binding specializer, and that generates, as I said, Java bytecode from the bindings. It can be switched off by a property. By default, it's enabled. It can also be dumped, so you can see what bytecode got generated. It is a bit slow when you have the first invocation, but after time, if you call it very frequently, the generated bytecode will also get just in time compiled, and then after some time, it will be fast. But that's not all. We still need the backend. The backend is called via JNI. There's a make downcall stub. And by the way, we are still using JNI. So it's still needed, at least inside the JVM or the JDK. Yeah, we need it at least to generate code for the foreign function interface. So next slide. We can trace what the backend does. At least we, if we have a debug build, we can use this log flag. And if we have an HSDIS library also in place, this allows us to see disassembled code. So the backend generates binary code into the code cache. And with the logging, we can see that disassembled. Is it large enough to read? I think so. So, pardon? What does this code do? At the beginning, so this is from x86 in this case, the first instructions create a stack frame. Then we have a thread state transition to inative. Before this point, garbage collector threads need to synchronize with our thread. Because obviously Java threads can access or modify Java objects, and garbage collector can move things around. So that needs to be coordinated. And after this thread state transition, the garbage collector threads know that we are in a native function, and we will no longer access Java objects, so that they can do what they want with a Java heap. So next step is to set up the argument. So in this case, all arguments are passed in registers. We don't need any stack slots. And then here, this is the call to the native function. And once that is done, we need to change the thread state back to in Java. And this direction is a bit more complicated. It includes the save point check and also a memory barrier. Yeah, the memory barrier may be a performance bottleneck, especially if you call this function very often and you have a large system with many sockets or at least many chips, because the memory barrier requires inter-chip communication then, and that may increase the latency. There are several ways to get rid of the memory barrier. So, by the way, it's a log-add instruction on x86. And we can use a system memory barrier instead. Hopefully not me. The system memory barrier makes this code cheaper because the log-add instruction will be omitted. But on the other side, it makes other things slower. For example, especially handshakes will be slower with that. So it's not always beneficial. But it is possible to get rid of all thread state transitions. Some of you may know critical chain inatives from older JDK releases. And that is now also possible with the foreign function interface. You can use it by a linker option. So this looks like this. We just need to add the linker option to the downcall handle, linker option critical, and by the Boolean argument here, we specify that the function is allowed to access the Java heap directly, and that makes things even more simple. So after that, we can just use a normal byte array, and we can pass that as a memory segment and finally convert the array to a Java string, which we can print. So it's pretty simple now. There's a warning on this slide. Do not use for anything which may block. The thread state transitions were there for a reason. If you now have anything which blocks, then you will also block the GC threads. We have GC developers in the room here, and they will not be happy if you block their threads. So don't do this. Maybe it would be an idea for April the 1st and file an issue. All right. So what happens if we do this with the backend? You can see the generated code is pretty simple now. There's nothing slow in it anymore. You can also see the address computation is now there. We compute the start of the array address, and the native function will directly write to that. So there are more linker options. So the next one is on this slide. It is possible to figure out the RNO, and the linker option is called capture call state. If we use that, we need to pass an additional memory segment for the captured state. And I'm using here a var handle to extract the RNO field from the structure after the call. So this is also a good feature that we can figure out the RNO after a native function call. But that adds some code to the generated code directly after the native function call. We see another function call to capture state, so that adds some overhead. So my example was a bit simple. It only used an array, but we can also pass more complicated structures like an IDF. Also, IDF has nothing to do with Israeli Defense Forces. It stands for int double float. And some platform structure layout rules require padding, which you can see here and here. You probably would not write this manually. There is a tool to generate such code. It's called JExtract. JExtract is based on LLVM, and it parses C header files, and it generates Java code. So is this code now platform independent? Not always. You can also see it in the comment here. AIX, for example, has a bit different layout rules. It doesn't use padding here by default, but fortunately there's a hack. We can build the native library on AIX with Pragma Align Natural, and that will make the layout compatible with Linux. If we don't do this, we have to modify the Java code for AIX. It's a bit unfortunate. So I have talked 16 minutes about down calls, and now I have to get to up calls, but I will make that short. What is the up call? Up call is the other direction. It is a call from native to Java, and the up call stub provides us a memory segment which can be passed to a native function and serve as a function pointer for a callback, so the native function can call back to Java, which is pretty nice. It generates a bit similar code to the downcall handle, which I'm not showing here, but it's more complex. It needs to save more registers, and it requires additional C calls for resource management, so up calls are always slower than down calls. So let's sum it up. There are several ways to call native function. The traditional way is chain I. And we have critical functions available if we enable it by the switch, critical chain I natives. But it's only available until JDK 17. It was removed later. And with the new foreign function interface, we have also critical functions available since JDK 22 as the linker option, as I already showed. So, but what can we do for JDK 21? There's one more option. It's Project Nalim, and the author is also here in the room. It is only for critical function. It is based on JVMCI, on the Java Virtual Machine Compiler interface, but it's not supported on all platforms, and it's not supported by the OpenJDK, so use it at your own risk. So I think I have a bit more time to talk about power-specific things. I have mentioned that I have ported it to power. I have one extra slide for that. So power has some special properties. The ABI has some special properties which were not implemented before. For example, integers need to be passed as longs, so we need sign extent. Floating point or floats need an instruction to convert it to double format, because float values are represented as double format when they are passed in registers. Then the HFA is extremely complicated, the homogeneous float aggregate. Some parts are typically passed in floating point registers, and once we have all floating point registers used, the rest gets passed in general purpose registers, and if there are not enough free general purpose registers, we also use DAG slots. And the float registers use the double format always, but the other parts may be compressed to 32 bits. So, and there are cases in which we need to use both register and stack slot for the same value. So that was terrible to implement. As I mentioned, we have three different ABIs on power. Big Endian needed a big some extra code. for Big Endian, we had to shift the value into the values into the right position, and I had to extend the binding operators and all that. So that was some extra work to be done. So I'm already done now. Panama can be used free of charge. It's open source. I'm sure some politicians will like the statement. Don't forget to grab a submachine sticker, and I think it's time for questions now. Yeah?
Those native blobs, can they inline into Caller as well?
The question is if these native blobs can inline. No, they can't. Only the code, the parts which are in Java, so the generated bytecode, they can be inlined, but not the blobs. Yeah. Any more questions? So I think we're done. And if any more questions come into your mind, you can find me here around. I'll be here for the rest of the day. So, and the next talk will also be about the foreign function interface, so stay tuned.